Street at Today SOR.
Time now for our Friday gathering. The panel is with me in studio, but first, a flavour of the big stories of the past week.
Now, I'm just actually getting a text message as we speak. Things are looking good. Sounds like game on, I'm told, from a very good source.
Tony Connolly, good morning. You're tweeting a deal has been done. Tell us more.
Yes, yeah, Sean, a deal has been done. There is a text which has been concluded, and we're expecting a statement from Michel Barnier in the next while.
Discussions over the past days have at times been difficult, but we have delivered, and we have delivered together.
Are the DUP on board, Tommy?
Well, according to their spokesman 90 seconds ago, it's news to them, Sean. They have not signed up. They still have their reservation.
Yeah, well, the backstop has been replaced. It's been replaced with a new solution, but that new solution does what we needed to do.
I do think that this deal represents a very good deal, both for the EU and for the UK. And I hope very much now that my fellow MPs in Westminster do now come together to get Brexit done, to get this excellent deal over the line.
We believe it is not in the interests of Northern Ireland, either economically, and I've explained all of that around a border, essentially, for not just regulations, but for goods. We have different VAT rules, and we have no effective consent over any of those rules. So all of that taken in the round means that we cannot support this deal.
Every gambler knows that the secret to surviving.
And that compilation was put together by Amy Ryan. Joining me now in studio are Alison O'Connor, Irish Examiner columnist, Ben Lowry, deputy editor of the Belfast Newsletter, Timmy Dooley, Fianna Fáil TD for Clare and party spokesperson on transport, and Kate O'Connell, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Bay South. Ben Lowry, apologies for getting your name wrong there. But I'm wondering about the contrast. I mean, in one sense, the sense of with betrayal, if it can be called that now, is comparable to what happened in 1985 with the Ulster Unionists, James Molyneux being on the Privy Council and Mrs. Thatcher then. But the language is much more moderate or moderated, is it not, in terms of giving expression to that on the part of the DUP?
Yeah, you've got it in one, that the scale of the disappointment, more or less complete, climbed down by Boris Johnson is actually quite complicated. There's some things that he gained, is like 1985, and it shows the how unionists can be swatted aside like 1985, but because of the fact that the DUP is at the heart of things, it issues, you know, very mildly worded statements. And another thing that's happened that's really interesting, the difference between 1985, DUP and Ulster Unionist Party have a long and, you know, considerable rivalry, but 1985 was so serious. I think it was one of the most seminal moments, seminal setbacks in the history of unionism, that they came together. Solidarity, unionist unity, fought that, you know, they couldn't even, there was a pact that people were expelled from the party if they tried to stand against the others for years. The exact opposite's happening here. The Ulster Unionist Party are being venomous towards the DUP. The divisions between the Ulster Unionist Party and the DUP is really considerable. And Jim Allister, who, whatever people think of him, he wouldn't be popular insofar as he's known on this side of the border. He is highly articulate, and a highly articulate critic who, point by point, does devastating rebuttals. And the DUP, in any event, couldn't really sign this. It had been pushed. It's certainly not going to support it tomorrow. I say certainly not. I don't think it is. It had been pushed to breaking point. It had agreed after the Tory Party conference a regulatory border in the Irish Sea, which was a massive concession. It probably made a big mistake in not owning that. It was treated with contempt by Ireland. There was no thank you, no generosity, no understanding for what they'd done. And within 2 weeks, Boris Johnson shows his mettle. When the EU and Ireland say no, he climbs down more or less completely.
And what about the consent question? Again, they seem to be very sore about that. But effectively, as has been pointed out, what they were looking for was effectively a DUP veto on everything that the UK did.
Yes, I mean, it was always hard to see this having been held up by veto. But I do think it's worth emphasising the unionist view on this and why there's a great sense of anger and demoralisation. Minority protection, which nationalists are frankly obsessed with, they've been obsessed with forever. Are they ever going to move beyond this victimhood? Minority protection was principally to make sure Catholic minority, that they wouldn't be trampled over. The moment unionists are in a majority, and that is a year ago or 2 years ago at the Assembly election, for the very first time, they fall into a minority, it is abandoned. So that's the perception, that the idea that you have to have the support of both communities, and I'm just trying to explain to you why unionists are angry about that.
Again, history repeating itself, Kate O'Connell, in the same way that Garrett Fitzgerald talked a good game about dealing with the unionists, he reached out over their heads. The Irish government is seen as having done the same thing now with Boris Johnson.
Yes, and I mean, the position...
On the basis of needs must, by the way.
Yeah, and our focus has always been on the Irish people, the island of Ireland, and peace on this island. What the internal arguments between the unionists and the greater party and the DUP and their relationship with Boris Johnson, although it's a concern to us, it's not something that we want to interfere in. Our focus is on getting the institutions in Northern Ireland up and running so that this deal can be worked through as such. But I have to say, I do have a lot of sympathy this morning for the DUP, because this is, I suppose, their raison d'etre has been to some extent destroyed in the last few weeks. You can see how Arlene Foster is deeply uncomfortable with the deal. But like that, for me, politics is about improving people's lives. It's about focusing on people. And I think this deal focuses on people. It focuses on peace on this island and focuses on the entire island. And I think it's a good deal. And I think it's the only deal on the table that reaches the objectives that we set out day one, for there to be no hard border on the island of Ireland, that there would be free movement of people, that there would be regulatory alignment between both jurisdictions. And this is... to my mind, almost can be simplified down to the separation of politics and economics. And that is very difficult for some people. But it's 25 years since the Good Friday Agreement. Time has moved on to some extent. Perhaps this moment in time, it's time for us all to re-examine where we are going collectively as an island.
Timmy Dooley, how do people in this state and in government primarily go about mending fences with the DUP?
Well, it's been done in the past, and it's something that I would have commented on over the last 2.5-3 years. I think the Irish government at times could have done a little bit more in terms of diplomatic efforts, both in and amongst the northern communities, and also within the UK. I think if the same level of diplomacy had been engaged with Theresa May at the time, I think we might have been in a better position. I'm somewhat taken by some of the euphoria that's existing around this agreement. It's welcome. We needed to get there. But it's still a hard Brexit for the UK. We're in a much worse position than we would have been had we gotten the Theresa May deal over the line. Now, that's history. That wasn't able to happen.
Where are we going to feel the pinch there?
We're going to feel the pinch within a year and a half for Irish companies that are exporting into the UK, if they're going to be hit with tariffs, which wasn't envisaged in the Theresa May deal. So I think when the dust settles on the other side of this sort of euphoric coming home, this isn't an Albert Reynolds coming home with 6 billion. It's not the Good Friday Agreement, like I heard you suggest earlier, or anything like that. Any element of Brexit
is
a bad deal.
Suggesting that it was a diplomatic triumph for this country in terms of...
It was the height of needling, Micheál Martin. I think you nearly choked when you didn't just list the...
Are you saying that I don't use it in those historical terms?
I thought, notwithstanding his very long day in Brussels yesterday and his late return last night, he handled it very well. He kept his calm.
But you were completely on the nose in terms of it being a very difficult swallow for Fianna Fáil.
The serious side of this, though, Alison, I mean, it is a very important moment in Irish and European history. There's no gainsaying that.
I suppose part of the difficulty, Sean, in judging it actually is that it's a deal that was done with a mixture of sort of momentum and exhaustion in the end, I heard them say at the start of Newsnight last night, a deal but not a done deal. So it was like sort of giving birth and then being told to turn around to do do the same thing again in terms of what's going to happen in the House of Commons tomorrow. And I mean, listen, very interesting to see that Financial Times thing where they're saying it's just, you know, a possibility that they'd get as close as three. Now, that would create its own momentum. But really, until we see what happens tomorrow, we're still in the interregnum. And in terms of the judgment, it does make it very difficult. And yet, if we had sat here even last Friday and thought we would be uttering a sentence with the words Boris Johnson, a deal done, and the EU, it would have seemed sort of fantastical almost.
But to some extent, like, you're beginning now a dismantling exercise. We've just agreed a demolition project, if you want, the dismantling of that relationship. So there will be a considerable amount of negativity flowing from this. So it's not like came together with a deal in the past and you brought to an end some negativity and you started to build.
Indeed.
We're actually regressing here. So that's where I think it kicks in, Sean, when companies that are now going to be faced with goods going into the UK and having to plan for a tariff environment within a relatively short period of time. That's going to impact on jobs in this country.
Ben Lowry, to what the DUP primarily does, and you know, they're unlike, say, John Taylor. They're not kind of apocalyptic in the way they're interpreting this. Arlene Foster, writing in what Tom O'Gorman described as very measured terms in the Belfast Telegraph this morning, saying, look, we will continue to work to shape the outcomes in Northern Ireland's interests, and our votes will be critical in that process. Now, okay, they're not going to vote. They're going to vote against tomorrow, but there are other votes that have to be pushed through if the terms of this are to be implemented in Westminster. So, how, I mean, do you think they're still there in negotiating?
Well, I think that you have to bear in mind the simple human aspect of this, which is that they were at the heart of things. I believe they weren't even phoned by Boris Johnson to say, you know, when we all heard, was it about 11 o'clock, that he was doing this.
They got a lot of FaceTime in the previous 3 days, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, but it doesn't alter the fact that it is, you know, it's pretty devastating. Listen, what's happened is so huge. It's the biggest constitutional change, I think, in terms of the United Kingdom since the Act of Union 1801. Of course, there have been bigger events like the Second World War. I'm not saying it's the biggest thing, but I'm saying in the change. And it's going to take us decades to realise what happened yesterday. And the really fundamental thing that happened, which is backing into your point about Arlene Foster and her link to the Tory MPs, is Middle England's never been tested before on what it thinks about the UK. It wasn't, you know, amazingly, you know, when you think back that hundreds of soldiers came over and died in fighting a long and determined terrorist campaign. But Middle England's never been tested. It never really said, we want rid of this place. And in this thing, it was tested. There were these polls that showed that more people in Middle England, they may or may not have been right, wanted a clean Brexit than they wanted the UK to stay together.
The Spartans, the so-called, and the guys near, they're all heading for the hills. They don't want to know about the DUP
And one of the things that unionists are going to realise in this, and remember there is a wing with the unionism that was probably quite dormant, it's emerging now in Steve Aitken, that was pro staying in the EU.
He's
expected to be the leader of the Ulster Unionists. So the Ulster Unionists are now flirting with the idea, which the party formally did, although it gave a free vote to people, of returning to the EU. It supported the EU back then. But what happened, and I was in this camp, I was a unionist who supported Remain. What we did after that was, I think we lost our voice. We didn't know what to do. We knew that the country was leaving. We knew that, you know, it wasn't an easy thing to return to the EU. So that voice was lost. But what I was going to say about the Spartans, the real friends of unionism, I think this is a difficult thing for the DUP and a lot of us to realise, are the moderate Tories. Theresa May did somersaults to avoid dividing the UK. She came up with a slightly crazy plan. Dominic Grieve, I interviewed him last year, he's dismayed at the prospect of a border in the Irish Sea. In other words, some of the most moderate wing of the Tory party are most pro the union, and it's some of these Spartans who are essentially English nationalists. And that's what this is all about, and that's why this moment is massive.
And did they use or abuse the DUP then, in your view?
Well, I think that you really have to wonder about this. So the three withdrawal agreements, 118 Tories, almost half of the Tory MPs oppose it the first time, then it's down to 80 or something the second time, then the third time, Rees-Mogg, Boris, all support it. So it was down to 34. And now I'm talking to an MP just before I came in there, here in the corridor there, who was saying to me they'd be surprised if it's 10 now. And that really asks the question of who, a big soul-searching moment for unionists, who, when it comes to the crunch, really supports the union. I mean, I am absolutely convinced that 500 plus of the 650 MPs are, you know, strongly pro-union. They all think of Northern Ireland as part of the UK. But when it comes to the crunch that it must be unfettered and you're going to go to the wire to it, you're down to a tiny number.
But I think what this narrative ignores, though, is this. Kate was mentioning sympathy for the DUP. The difficulty is the DUP makes feeling sympathy for them exceptionally difficult. They specialise in losing friends and winning enemies. Having said that, I think there's been enormous damage done. Simon Coveney touched on this, both from the Irish government's point of view and also, as Ben was just talking about, in terms of really exposing what Middle England, the attitude to the union and unionism. And I think there's a strong argument to say that things could have been very different if Fine Gael, I think it's been a magnificent week for the Taoiseach, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, and Helen McEntee with them. But I think that you go back and you see a very cack-handed way of dealing with things in terms of Fine Gael over previous years, simply on the North, and that had they had a different attitude and a different way of going about that, that the Assembly could have been up and running by now. So that it's you can argue that they've performed really well this week, but that's all rather late in the day in terms of what could have happened and what could have been there before we got really into the thick of the Brexit negotiations.
Do you think, Timmy Dooley, the return of the Assembly is as far away as ever? Where do you see that going?
That's difficult to say. I think, you know, not wanting to lecture anybody about what they need to do, but if you want to have a position on what's going on within the region, well, then the sooner they can get back around the table and start working on it. But I think this deal gives the idea of a special status, if you want, to the six counties. It gives that region a real chance in a Brexit environment for economic growth, because they have the best of both worlds. They have access to the European markets unfettered. They have access to the UK market unfettered. I think there's real positives there on the economics, not at all taking from the politics, and I accept and understand the intractable situation and positions that have been amongst parties, but the Assembly is there, and that's the place to try and thrash that out. And I know how difficult it has been for both sides to get back around the table. Maybe there will now be a recognition and an acceptance that you are going to get steamrolled over if you don't get back around the table there.
Kate O'Connell, I know you don't speak for Sinn Féin, but I think abortion is an issue that you've paid a close amount of attention to in recent years, particularly in the referendum campaign. Now, as it happens, if the Assembly isn't up and running again by next Monday, there are going to be legislative measures that were passed, both in regard to same-sex marriage and abortion, will effectively kick in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, decriminalisation from Monday.
From Monday. Yeah. Now, do you think there was a sense that Sinn Féin are happy to let those things happen because they achieve one of their policy objectives?
Yeah, there is a school of thought that, you know, it's probably in the interest of getting these two items across that there was no Assembly on Monday. And, you know,
it might be convened, but it's not going to actually do anything.
And then there's also a school of thought that it might suit certain people who would be technically against such issues to have it done out of their control. But the fact is that this is really putting it up to them that if you don't operate in Stormont, the UK can, you know, force you to do things. But to get back to the idea of the ideology, you know, the impact of if the result were a border on the island of Ireland, you were looking at economic destruction in Northern Ireland. So were you going to like the unionists in terms of an ideology over the fate of their people? And in terms of agriculture, like if there was a hard Brexit or a border, like just tankards of milk could not come across the border. These were real things. They would have been droves of cattle being just let loose into Cavan. That is really what you were looking at. So in terms of helping people, which is the point of politics, I think the result that we have last night, and hopefully, or some version of it, the vote tomorrow, we don't know what's going to happen, but that it will serve the people in the to the future in the best way possible. I don't know how anybody in politics with their decisions would want to wreck economic hardship on their people. To me, that is just contrary to politics.
Why aren't they looking at the upside, Ben, is the question.
Well, I think that unionists are going to have to look at the upside. I mean, for example, this fact that it's changed into a majority when it suddenly suits Nationalist Ireland is nothing less than an outrage, but we're not going to be able to get Boris Johnson to change his mind. So maybe unionists need to think, well, OK, we're going to have to work very, very hard, and maybe it's conceivable that we'll get a majority, wean some people over the years from the Alliance Party if we have a different approach to this. I think that's just the way it's going to have to be. But about the border, just very quickly, I think what we... Yes, no sense of... I've been up and down to Dublin several times this week on the motorway, on the train. There aren't many unionists who want the border to become more difficult, aside from the fact that agriculture would be very badly hit. But agriculture is the only really big cross-border thing. What we have done to placate this, to placate the political feeling, is that the 85% of business between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK is going to face very significant barriers. Mm. And no unionist was threatening violence. OK, there are some loyalists who have as much support as dissidents talking about in the streets. But the average unionist was not threatening, and that was lurking in the background. Outrageously, Leo Varadkar mentioning an attack on a customs border, which was by the IRA, when the British government was so restrained over decades in this long terrorist campaign, to be mentioning violence, and Britain didn't even contradict him. And this is the thing, Britain will never contradict Irish ministers, no matter what they say.
To my mind, it's time, I think, for us all to move on a bit. And I think that is the struggle here, that from my reading down here, looking, and with all respect to you, is that you don't seem to get the impact of your decisions. You don't seem to get that a minority having a veto in terms of an economic position is just fundamentally undemocratic.
Just speaking of moving on, Alison, what about the prospects of an early election now?
One very brief sentence on that is that I would like to say, for all the negativity and negative implications of there not being an assembly for the last couple of years, I think it would be a very positive thing if, in the absence of the assembly, that law on abortion and same-sex marriage goes through for the North next week.
Yeah, but I suppose the other point that could be made is, without the say-so of the assembly or the people, it just happens.
I know, but I agree. That is regrettable. That is regrettable, but I believe that it is a positive thing to have happened. I think that we are, obviously we're going to wait and see what happens tomorrow, but there is certainly, hand in hand with what was going on in Brussels and London and Belfast this week, in Dublin, there's a real head of steam, sort of somewhat frenzied, if you like, particularly given the Irish Times poll on, I think it was on Monday, which showed a real leap for Leo Varadkar's approval and for satisfaction with the government. And I can't say I was that surprised. There are some people, and I was speaking to some people in Fianna Fáil, who were starting to say in the last few weeks, oh, look, people are sick of Brexit. Do you really think that, they'll give that much credit? And it shows that people do, and they think that a very good job has been done. And I think that Fianna Fáil are now on the back foot. They're feeling uncomfortable. They came out of the summer very well. And you saw from your interview with Micheál Martin earlier, whereas this day last week, they would have, I think, felt much more gung-ho about an election, a lot less so today.
Well, I'd reject that. I mean, I think we've always taken the view that we were going to get this budget through and the associated legislation with it. The Taoiseach had indicated he wanted an election in May, and we hadn't demurred from that in any way. That was our expectation. If the Taoiseach wants to go to the country, Fianna Fáil will be ready. We have held virtually all our conventions. Our candidates are out canvassing. So we're not afraid of an election in any shape or form. In any electoral cycle, there will be ups and downs for political parties, and that's what keeps media going and what keeps opinion pollsters going. There will be an election campaign, and there will be issues that will have to be discussed. And whilst credit, I'm sure, will be given for the approach taken by the Taoiseach and the Minister for Foreign Affairs, there will also be credit given to Micheál Martin and the position taken by him and the Fianna Fáil party in relation to supporting the government through that. But then there will be very serious questions asked of the outgoing government around the state of homelessness, around the state of the accident and emergency overcrowding, about the delays to get access to healthcare, the myriad of issues that people will elect the next government on. And I think, over the course of a 21-day campaign, it will pivot very quickly.
Brexit will those wear issues off. And the we'll diplomatic triumph will wear off quite quickly. Beware an early election, Kate O'Connell.
Well, it would have been a long time to if there was a no deal to get the effects of that to wear off. I mean, we were very heartened by the consistent support for Fine Gael across all age groups and the rise in support for Leo Varadkar's 60% approval for our handling of Brexit. And it's business as usual in terms of Pascal Dunne, who's in speaking with the Trump administration this morning. As far as I know, the Taoiseach's in Brussels. We are busy doing the work that a government does. And whenever there's an election, I mean, the Taoiseach did ask Micheál Martin to commit to an election in May 2020, and that never happened. It's the Taoiseach's preference to have an election in May 2020. And if there's an election before that, my focus is on getting myself elected in this constituency and getting my sister elected in Tipperary.
And I suppose you'd like Owen Murphy to get in there as well.
I'll bring Owen Murphy in as well with me, perhaps.
Listen, that's the key thing is going to be how quickly Fianna Fáil quite legitimately can bring the narrative around to housing and to health. And they are two very strong subjects for them. But I think the other intriguing thing is going to be this notion of the head-to-head between Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin. We already know Micheál Martin is an exceptionally good performer in debates at general election time. We had another hint there during the week in the Dáil when the Taoiseach spoke about the tragic and awful death of Timmy Harahan in Cork, the homeless man, where he spoke about him quite legitimately that being offered services in an apartment and that, but then saying, you know, and all of that paid for by the government, completely unnecessary, inappropriate, annoying people, and something that the Taoiseach is prone to do in terms of foot and mouth. And what worries Fine Gael is this idea that he'll go off on those sort of ones, if you like, during an election campaign.
I'm not one bit worried about that.
Okay,
in terms of
I should say, Alison, in response to what you said earlier, a number of listeners have been texting to say they think it's very disappointing if abortion comes into Northern Ireland from Monday. But look, you made your point there. I want to go back to you, if I can, Ben Lowry, and just go back to where we started. What do you think will happen tomorrow in the Commons?
Well, I think it is going to be a close vote, and I think that as was said earlier, it is going to be that will give it momentum if he loses. But essentially, in a way, you could say that what Boris Johnson has done is published a manifesto. I mean, if the Tories get back in with an overall majority, they'll go for a deal like the one that's been agreed.
And one other quick one around the table. Ireland versus New Zealand. Timmy Dooley.
I think Ireland, absolutely. There's no choice there. I think they'll do it.
Yeah.
And we could do with it after the weekend.
An interesting semi-final with all this going on.
Cross-border agreement.
It's impossible to beat leads the Irish out. Occasionally, the New Zealanders.
Okay, well, look, my thanks to you all. For coming into studio. Alison O'Connor, Irish Examiner columnist, Ben Lowry, deputy editor of the Belfast Newsletter, Timmy Dooley, Fianna Fáil TD for Clare and party spokesperson on transport, and Kate O'Connell, Fine Gael TD and candidate for Dublin Bay South. My thanks to you all for being with us. And the programme today was produced by Tara Campbell. Just one headline, by the way, for you. The Taoiseach Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, has sought to reassure the unionist community that the proposed Brexit deal poses no threat to the constitutional status of Northern Ireland. He said the deal removes the backstop as it was and ensures that Northern Ireland remains part of the UK customs union in a legal reality, but includes a democratic checking system to prevent any north-south infrastructure. That is our lot, as I say. Produced by Tara Campbell, today's programme. Researched by Niamh Lyons, on sound, Ciarán Dunne. Over now to Ronan.